Hey, everybody. Welcome to Love and Relo, the voice of the relocation industry. I am your host, Ben Cross, and I'm blessed and honored to be here with my friend and the moving guru, the commercial office moving guru himself, Ed Katz, who is the president of IOMI, the International Office Moving Institute. Ed, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. This is truly an honor and a pleasure. And I met you in Toronto, and this is second best. Thank you so much.
Ed, honestly, I've been wanting to have you on my show for a few years now. And I heard so many great things about you, so many people whom I respect. You've trained over the years. They hold you in such high regard. And then I got a chance to meet you. And I got to be honest, I liked you even more after that. I can't say that about everybody in this business, Ed.
Thank you so much. Feelings are mutual, honestly.
No, this is great having you here. And another reason we're here, and get in the comments, everybody. If you're watching this right now, get in the comments on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on YouTube. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you're thinking. If you've got questions for Ed about office moving, commercial moving of any kind, get in there. We've got Annie Ream checking in here. Hi, Ed. Heard only great things about you. But she's allowed to repeat. Roger Wise, it's a beautiful day in Arizona. Hey, Roger, good to see you. 2 days in a row, Roger. He's on a heater. This is great. Hit that like button, everybody. Look at this. We got Adrian in the house checking in from Glomo HQ. This is great. The more people we get on the team, Ed, the more people watch the show. There's a correlation, Ed. It's interesting. No, but Ed, the reason I wanted to have you on the show is because, you know, we do recruiting here, and the number one most popular job request we are getting right now is for commercial moving salespeople. And I got to ask you, why do you think that is, Ed?
It's called revenue. Unfortunately, moving companies, a lot of them are in the revenue business. We were in the profit business when I owned my moving company.
Wait, there's still for-profit movers out there?
Yeah, I think there are. But, you know, the engine that pulls the train is revenue. And you don't need operations. You don't need customer service. You don't need customer support or bookkeeping if you don't have the revenue. I can see why.
Well, and we're seeing a lot of other areas that are kind of depressed right now in the moving and relocation business, right? I mean, corporate relocation is way down right now. Private consumer COD moves is down. I mean, interest rates are so high. People can't afford to buy a house. People don't want to sell their house because they don't want to get out of the interest rate they already have, right? And so there's all this residential moving that's not happening right now. And it seems like the hot thing. And this is so funny because we're coming out of all this work from home stuff where people are wondering about the demise of the office environment. But office moving, commercial moving, logistics projects and the such, I mean, that's hot right now. It's the biggest growth area of most moving companies right now.
I agree. I agree. From my clients, that's what I understand. It's hot.
It's hot. Yeah. And I want to talk to you a little bit about your history in this business, you know, about IOMI. I'm fascinated to understand the business model, about your experience as a mover and owning a moving company, because you owned Peachtree in Atlanta for many years. Paul Salmon here, greetings from Atlanta. 2 days in a row for me too, Ben. Need some love. What's up, Paul? Good to see you, Paul. That we've got Syracuse in the house. David Yakim from Coleman Allied and North American checking in. What's up, David? Good to see you. David, you got office moving questions for Ed? Get free advice right now. Ed charges a lot of money for this stuff normally. He's giving game for free out here on Love and Relo. But Ed, take us back to the beginning. Before we get into the IOMI and what you're doing now, tell us your story.
Well, with Peachtree Movers or IOMI or both or what?
Yeah, how you got into the moving business before IOMI?
Now that I know what I know, I think I fell out of bed one morning, hit my head on the floor and said, I want to be an office mover, right? I mean, who in their right mind would want to be in a capital and labor intensive business? Anyhow, I escaped from New York. I was on Wall Street for 4 years, moved to the promised land. Best decision ever made in my life.
And Wall Street to Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And, loved Atlanta, and I leased office space during one of the worst real estate recessions in Atlanta. It was 1974, 75. And I failed. I failed in leasing office space. And I said, I need a job. I need income. And after struggling to lease office space during this terrible recession, I had a company move me. And that's another story. That was a wife ago. But she went back to New York.
A wife ago.
Anyhow, I had one room of furniture left after she took everything back to New York. And these two guys showed up in uniform and a clean truck, and they moved me in an hour and a half. That's how little I had left. And I said, you know, that looked really easy. I think I could do that. And I tried to connect the dots. I had all these contacts in real estate because for a year I leased office space or tried. And I knew all these property management companies and landlords, and I had this great move, and I thought, maybe there's a connection. So I, after failing in real estate, I wrote a letter to every moving company in Atlanta, every moving company, there were 80 of them. And I said, I will work for free for 2 weeks. If you like what I do, you can hire me. If not, one guy named Don Aaron, who was an agent for Lion Van Lines, before that Transamerica, whatever the heck that was, hired me, and I worked for free for 2 weeks as a mover helper. Nearly killed myself.
Wow, in Atlanta. What time of year was this? Was it a hot Atlanta time?
The March of 1976. And I worked for him for six months, and I did. He was a typical, at the time, long-distance mover. He could sell ice or snow in December in New York. That's how great a salesperson he was. The only problem was he never heard of the word operations. Boy, I sure hope he's not listening.
That's how salespeople are, right? We just sell it and forget it, right?
Yeah. Well, he was the
David owner. Yacob knows about that, right? He knows that Ben will just sell it, and then David's got to figure it out over there. David used to be our operations manager at a prior company.
And I told him all the time, I wanted to start my own moving company. So he actually helped me order my first truck. He was very supportive. November 1st, 1976, I started Peachtree Movers. And Ben, my claim to fame is this: I have made every mistake known to man you could possibly make in running a moving company. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I didn't know that I didn't know. And I guess my claim
to fame. There's a beauty in that, though. I love that.
No, it's true.
What's the claim to fame?
You know, I was always on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And I knew I couldn't commit suicide because it's always in a single-story warehouse building. If I jumped out the window, the worst that's going to happen to me is I'm going to be flat on my back, staring at the ceiling the rest of my life with tubes in me. So suicide was not an option.
I like how moving is further down the list from suicide. It's like, well, I can't commit suicide. Might as well go in the moving industry.
Right. Oh, geez. So I said, how can I prevent the same mistakes from happening again? So through a back door, I created an infrastructure. I created a procedure for everything that could possibly go wrong over the 24 years I had my moving company. And we did like more than 50,000 local moves over that 24-year period, most of which were office moves. And it wasn't that problems didn't happen. It was when they happened, what gun is cocked, so you knew what to do if and when something happened. Can I give you a stupid example?
Love stupid examples.
It's Friday night, 11 o'clock at night. I get a call from one of my supervisors, Mr. Cass. The truck is loaded with furniture. We're in Duluth, Georgia, an hour from base. I have a flat tire. Of course, it's a front tire. What do I do? I didn't know what to do. It was called the Yellow Pages. I go through the Yellow Pages. Nobody ever answered. I called every company that sold tires. Nobody answered. So finally, I had to hire a very expensive tow truck that 2 hours later, my guys are still on the clock. 2 hours later, they tow the loaded truck to the destination on the clock. We unload the truck. They then tow it to somewhere. We get the tire fixed.
So they towed it with the shipment on it. They unloaded it. I thought you were going to the mechanic. You're like, no, I got to go deliver.
No. So how do I prevent the same problem from happening again? That's just a perfect, typical example of what my life was like. Why, you know, nervous breakdown, Ed. So I started contacting the following week tire companies, and I said, do you offer 24/7 service? Out of all the tire companies in Atlanta, one said yes. And I said to myself, I don't care what this company charges for tires. This is going to be my service provider.
Yeah.
And for the next 23 and a half years, I bought my tires from this company who serviced us to death, so that not if, but when we had a flat tire, I don't care what day of the week, what time of the day, I had that gun cock. And I have, I'm not going to bore you or your audience with all the thousands of examples I've had over the years, but I would, I'm sure I've experienced, I was like Job times 10. Everything that could happen that could go wrong went wrong. But then after I recovered from the emotional, like, oh, what am I going to do? I came up with a process on preventing it from happening again. Not the problem, but the disaster.
So what do you got, like 24 years at Peachtree, designing every process under the sun, figuring out every way to screw up working in the moving business, and then you decide to get out of Peachtree. Would you sell the business?
I didn't decide to get out of Peachtree. Who's been misinforming you, Ben?
Oh, I don't know. It's your former owner.
I had no exit strategy. So one day, my partner of 19 years comes into my office and she says, Ed Katz, I can't stand you. You're crazy. You're an idiot. And I want a divorce.
Oh, got it.
Well, you wanted to hear the dirt. Now you know.
Yeah.
So,
jeez.
Part of our settlement was we would sell Peachtree movers. And I had already over the years taught a couple in-person 3-day office moving seminars on what we teach, how to estimate accurately, how to render the service with a minimum risk of injury to the employees, and how to minimize the risk of injury to the furniture and the electronics and the buildings you're moving from and to. I had dabbled in that. So now I'm 57, 58 years old. I'm out of a job. What am I going to do? I don't want to live off savings. I had to find something to do. So here I am, the self-proclaimed, self-ordained minister of office moving. That's who I became, a legend in my own mind.
Yeah, I can sympathize. I get
so anyhow, that's how I came in through a back door into doing what I'm doing today.
Yeah, so you decide, okay, well, I sold my moving company. You probably had some sort of a non-compete or whatever, right? After the sale, as most people do, that's usually part of the deal, right? And so you're like, okay, I'm going to take all these processes and I'm going to start teaching this business. I mean, who was your first customer? Where did you even get the idea that you could actually sell this knowledge?
It wasn't my idea. It was just like the divorce and selling Peachtree movers. I don't know.
So your ex-wife told you, go start training movers?
She told me, I can tell you, no, I can't tell you where she told me to go. But anyhow, Atlanta is not, except for Coca-Cola, Atlanta is really not a headquarters town. It's a regional town on your way up the corporate chain, up the corporate ladder. So a lot of companies that move with our company, Peachtree Movers, then these executives were transferred to Chicago, to San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, and they saw we did it a better way. And so when they were in their new jobs in other cities, they said to the moving companies that were bidding on their jobs, you need to call this guy in Atlanta, because he offers something that's different than all other moving companies. It's called the boxless move. We're not shutting down before the move and packing the contents of our furniture because we know there's a better way. So that, in a combination with my offering the training of how to do it right, sent customers to me. I wasn't smart enough to figure this out on my own. I just came up with it to survive in Atlanta. So here I am.
We got questions coming up. I want to learn more about IOMI and what it is you teach and how you can actually make money in the office moving business. I got tons of questions because I came up doing COD moves over the phone and then doing corporate relocation moves, outside sales. But I never really touched office moving. Frankly, I thought it was a little daunting. So you know, maybe I need to get my certificate. But anyway, we're going to learn more about that. But we do have some questions coming in here and some comments. Get in the comments, y'all. It's more fun. Give me something to talk about. I want to hear what you're thinking. Jillian says that studio light is on point. Thank you, Jill. You know, we got some simple yet tactical lighting solutions here going on. Shout out to Adam, our producer, who does amazing work for it. David Yakim. David's got a question. You know, there's confusion. I guess he wants to know, is Ed associated with OMA? Is OMA expanding as a network of workplace solutions? So what is there any affiliation whatsoever? Two separate entities? How is there a difference?
Probably 40% of all the members of OMA are my clients already in terms of taking my online training or my in-person training. I'm not a member of OMA. We're a totally separate organization. We are not an alliance. We're not a trade association. We have no members. We are an independent training organization, beholden to nobody. So we teach best practice methods, again, not to bore you, but to minimize the risk of your employees getting hurt, minimize the risk of damage, estimate
accurately. It sounds kind of like the difference maybe between FEDE and IAM, where FEDE is more of a training associate, you know, well, I guess they're association too, but that, you know, you train people on how to do an amazing job with office moves. And then they may or may not become affiliated with OMA later in order to get more business, if you
will. Yeah. I can't speak for OMA, but what I've heard from the outside looking in is they pull other movers that are members into deals when they have a national account. Mm-hmm. If I'm in Atlanta with a moving company and my client has an office in Phoenix and they need to have a move, we say we can do it with our partners in Phoenix.
Yeah.
That's what I know.
Yeah, I do hear good things, and they do seem to be expanding too, just because commercial moving and office moving right now is so hot. So I got to ask you, Ed, I've never sold office moving before. Maybe I had like a $5,000 office move, which is like peanuts, as you know, back in the day when I was in Detroit. But how do you make money? What's the key to making money in office moving?
Well, my recommendation is to be in the profit business, not the revenue business.
What's the difference?
The difference is we focus on gross profit. In other words, if I can define that for you, because everybody I talk to has a different definition. We try to achieve a 50% gross profit margin. And average revenue for us, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for an average office move. Let's pretend it's a $10,000 move, yep, revenue. If I subtract the actual labor that rendered the service from that revenue, if I subtracted the cost of the packing material for that particular move, if I subtracted the depreciation of the four-wheel dollies, the panel carts, and the trucks for that move, and if I subtracted the salesperson's total salary, compensation, commission, whatever you want to call it, let's say 10%, that would, on average, for our company, be $5,000. $5,000 from $10,000 equals a 50% gross profit margin.
So really, you're looking at the cost of goods sold, cost of sales. You're adding in a little bit of the overhead, like depreciation and things like that, you know, and 50% after all that. I mean, that's really healthy. Have margins been able to be maintained at that rate? I mean, we hear a lot about price pressure in the marketplace and how procurement's taken over these processes. Have prices been able to hold at that kind of profit margin from what you're seeing?
It depends on the service provider. If you're perceived as a generic commodity, you better be the lowest price.
Right.
We went out of our way to be perceived as rendering a premium service, so in return, we could charge a premium price. The other movers in Atlanta often, I almost mentioned Steve John's name, great guy with Grable, used to tell his clients, you ought to get a bid from Peachtree Movers. He knew darn well we would be double his price. But for people who didn't care about their furniture, didn't care about the buildings they were moving from or moving to, and focused just on price, like the government, would go to a different service provider. But if they wanted to be insured that they'd be open for business the next working day with a minimum risk amount of downtime, and they could get consistent service so they could sleep at night and not worry about, depending on what crew you got, was it going to be a good move or not? Then they hired us.
You know, I really like what you're saying there. And it reminds me of my time back in Detroit working for a mover that did a ton of office moving, although it wasn't my purview. They did a lot of it. And this reminds me of something I learned there. They would do these presentations for the basically the office manager or the person in charge of office moves, right? And they would do these presentations along with commercial real estate folks. And they would kind of rent out these like little, they do these seminars, if you will, these half day or full day seminars, basically kind of showing people how to plan an office relocation, from everything from the IT to the moving to the carpet installation, right? And one of the things they said was, and I don't know where they got the statistic from, they said 70% of people either get a promotion or get fired after managing an office relocation. And it's like,
I'm familiar with that statistic, but it said this, it didn't say promotion. 70% of people who are responsible for an office move either get fired or demoted. They didn't say anything about a promotion.
Oh, demoted was the other one. It wasn't cake or death. It was death or death. Okay, I gotcha.
That's how many failures. That's why there's so many relocation consultants, because the industry is infamous, and that's not good. That's not the same as famous, right? Infamous.
Yeah,
our industry is infamous for overpromising, underservicing, and not rendering the service that they promise in the sales presentation. So we have now relocation consultants who often charge as much as the movers charge. It's insane.
To manage the moves and to be that aggregator.
To protect the shipper, the customer from us. Nice. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. I got more questions on this, but Roger's hopping in. Keep these questions coming. Get in the comments. I want to hear your questions for the office moving guru, Ed Katz, the legend in his own mind and this time right now. Roger's saying, we read so much about corporate America decommissioning their office space. How do movers leverage that trend to make money?
They're not going to like my answer, but too little, too late. Barn doors are open. Horses are gone, because that was the last 2.5 years decommissioning. Nobody wants to get rid of any more furniture because nobody can digest any more furniture. We've given up. The nonprofits have taken all they can digest. So that's not the way to make money. Look, I started my moving company during the worst real estate recession that ever hit Atlanta, even worse than now. And the buildings were like 25 to 30% vacant. Does that sound at all familiar to today's economy? Like,
I mean, we moved into an office building, you know, a month ago? And I'd be shocked if the occupancy on this building was 25%.
Okay. Perfect time to be an office member. Why would I say that?
Why? I have no idea.
This is when it's all about cash flow. So now the banks and the insurance companies, as they did in Atlanta in 1975, 76, and 77, may end up owning the real estate again when they take back the buildings because they can't pay the mortgages because there's little or no rent coming in. Okay, that aside, landlords will pay to get companies to move into their buildings. What do I mean by that? Just like when I started my moving company, I courted landlords. I said, we're going to be a guest in your house. We want to be invited back. We're going to minimize the disruption that normally occurs during a move. We're going to minimize the risk of damage to your elevators, your floors, your walls, your doors. We're not going to block the cars in the parking lot when we make a delivery during the day. We're not going to trash your bathrooms. We're going to aim before we fire, whatever that means. You got to be a guy to understand that. But anyhow, and here's there was no such thing as a cell phone number. Here's my home number. Here's my office number. We will be accountable. If you, God forbid, ever see us do something wrong, you call the owner, Ed Katz. So these landlords, they have this thing called TI budget, tenant improvement budget. They needed rent, just like they needed today. They paid for the leasehold improvements, the chair molding around the walls, the plush carpeting, the wall treatment like wallpaper. They paid for the office move. They never said that price is too expensive, piece removers. They said, when can you move them in? So companies that would normally rent in a C-class type building all of a sudden can now move into a much more prestigious B-class building at the same rent they were paying before for the C-class building. And the landlord was not only going to give them a lower rent, they're going to give them 3 months rent free. They're going to pay for the move, give them leasehold improvements. And then all these companies that were in B-type buildings could move into A-class buildings.
Yep.
Same offer, same deals. That's what's going to happen now. And you want to believe what sells newspapers. They're old. Everybody's going to work from home. And we're not going to fill these office buildings. Let me tell you something. Read what I read. In New York, more and more companies are mandating that these employees go back to work. Do you have any idea?
It's true. I see it at Goldman Sachs. My buddy works at Goldman.
Look at me. I work from home. I don't have an alarm clock. I start work when I wake up. I want to eat something. I smell my wife cooking something in the kitchen. You think I'm doing work? Sorry, Ben. I got to get off the phone now. My wife's making
Oh, I hear that. I mean, I worked from home before. I'll tell you what, man, those breakfasts at the workstation there, get the scrambled eggs going, a little banana, a cup of coffee with the hazelnut coffee made in there.
Based on my client feedback from all the clients that are my moving company clients all over the United States, really all over North America, it's coming back, and it's going to come back even more. And more companies are realizing you lose creativity, you lose research, you lose new ideas when you work from home. I don't care.
You can zoom all you want. Yeah. I was talking to a guy that owns a firm, and he was like, you know, honestly, the human mind, human body atrophies.
That's right.
You know, well, I mean, I was reading, I remember studies back when I was in high school and college, they talked about, you know, if you don't hold a baby when it's born, if you don't have human contact,
that's right.
Maybe won't survive.
I've been working at home now since 2000, since I sold my moving company. I'm 35 years old, but look what, look what atrophy does from working from home. This is what you get when you work from home. This is why the office buildings are going to get filled back up again.
Hey, we got questions coming in. Keep those questions coming in. Otherwise, Ed and I are left to our own devices. Please keep the questions coming in. We've got a great one here. So, Ed, we know there's a peak season for household goods moving, right? You know, Memorial Day to Labor Day, right? Paul wants to know, is there a peak time of the year where there's an increase in office move activity?
There's only one slow month every year in my book, and that was August. We were just as busy November, December, January, February, March as we were year round. Very stable, very consistent. For some reason, August, we were not out of business, but we saw a taper off. It seemed in Atlanta, when I lived in Atlanta and I owned Peachtree Movers, that owners and decision makers took their vacation in August. I don't know why.
Right before school goes back.
Who goes to Miami Beach in August? Not at Cats.
Yeah, you go to Long Island. You got to go up to the shore.
They go to Long Island, right. But anyhow, my point is this. We were busy year round. And the beauty of office moving in most markets, it's 100% deregulated. So let's say I'm a household good mover and I'm busy from April till mid-October. That's when I'm slammed. I can hardly fill the need. If I'm going to fill in with office moving the rest of the year and I'm still an office mover in the spring and summer, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to raise my rates. Right. I'm going to be like the airlines when there's just a few seats left. So in the period that I want to slow down the demand but still make windfall profits, I'm going to raise my price.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's supply and demand, right? It's yield management.
Yeah.
Totally, totally. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about office moving is, I won't say it's counter cyclical to household goods, but it definitely can exist in the troughs of your household goods business. Now, it could become your primary business, like it was for Ed and like it is for so many other these IOMI members, you know, IOMI companies to get their training and OMA companies and whatnot. But it can also serve to augment your troughs and keep your guys busy and trucks running and revenue stable. So I think it definitely serves a major purpose in a healthy business mix.
I was involved in a 200-plus truckload move from Gwinnett County, a suburb of Atlanta, to Suwanee, Georgia. 200 truckload move. We started midday the day before Thanksgiving, and it went for 4.5-5 weeks, I mean, almost every day. That was wonderful. That went almost till the end of December. And that was just wonderful, wonderful revenue and profit. And, you know, I mean, that's.
Was that the biggest move? Was that the biggest move yet? Was that the biggest office move you ever did?
No, the biggest office move I ever did was we moved at the time MCI into their headquarters. We had done every move for MCI from the time they were in Atlanta back. They started in downtown Atlanta. In fact, they started off with used furniture. I'll never forget this. And this company named MCI that I had never heard of moved like 2 truckloads of furniture. Their furniture was so old and beat up, I didn't even want it to go on my new moving vans. I don't want that.
Got bed bugs on it? Yeah, right.
But we did every move for them over the next 18, 20 years that I had my moving company. And then they moved into 300,000 square feet. And they got bids, and we were way higher than everybody else. But we didn't discount for anybody. I don't care how big the move was. Now, I got to be honest with you.
Please.
See, most moving companies are elephant hunters. What does that mean? Everybody and his uncle
want big game hunters. They want the big. Yeah. They want the big moves. The big
right. Ride. So this is a true story. So I'd been on the Delta Airlines move. Right, they're moving their headquarters. I don't know when this early 1990s. And I'm sitting with the director of facilities, and he says, "Katz, you're a son of a." I'm not going to say it. We're on Facebook. He said, "I said, excuse me. I mean, I." He said, "Your price of $450,000." He said, "I can hire one of the other movers for $180,000 moving costs. You got this? They can destroy all my furniture. I can go out, pay their moving bill, go out and buy all new furniture, and still won't equal what you are quoting on this job. You sure you don't want to lower it?" I said, "Nope." So we didn't do that. We were a boutique within the movie industry. Yeah, we did the MCI, we did Travelers, we did Hellfire Missile Division for Rockwell. We did several million dollars worth of business for Rockwell. These were good, loyal customers. But the point I'm trying to make was this. Everybody and his uncle wants the big move, and they don't bid the job, they bid the competition. That's what they do, because I know how LY is going to bid. So I'm going to
bid. Don't bid the job, they bid the competition. They what do. Does that mean?
That means that I know how everybody else bids, so I'm going to lower my bid just to be lower than theirs. That's what bidding the competition means. We, on the other hand, we're not elephant hunters. Look, my competitors would bid $10,000 on an office move, and we bid $20,000. Well, that's 200% more than our bid, but it's only $10,000 more. Look what you get. POMG. You get POMG. POMG.
What is POMG?
Peace of mind guaranteed. Can you feel my arms hugging you right now?
Yeah, I feel warm and fuzzy right now, Ed. I felt like I never felt about
it's only $10,000. Forget about the percentage. Nobody plays the percentage. They got to sleep at night. They got to worry about, are they going to lose their job because they're not open for business the next working day because they hired a mover that didn't finish it on time for the price quoted. Half their stuff's still at the old location. Their employees are going to the new location. Their phones are at the new location, and they're out of business.
I got a question for you, Ed, a selfish question, okay? I see my teams on here, okay? So you know what? They're participating. I'm going to ask a question on behalf of these folks. What's up, Adrian? He says we just experienced the office improvements moving into our new space. And Adrian actually coordinated our facilities move here, and he was one of the lucky 30%. So, you know, that's something to be said for Adrian, but I wanted to ask you a question. So we recruit people, office moving salespeople. What should we be looking for in a good office moving salesperson?
I have to think before I answer this, considering who I'm talking to. The industry is so famous for cannibalism, right? I'm going to hire somebody to work for somebody else with a book of business. You ever hear that before? I'm going to bring my house.
Of course. I'm going to bring everybody wants a book.
Yeah. I want to get into office mover overnight. I'm an owner. I know nothing about office moving. I want to grow that division because of my revenue is down. So I hire a salesperson who worked for another moving company. I offer him a higher commission or a base salary, whatever. And he brings his book of business. There are many, many times that works very well. But there are some times you got to have your eyes open what you're getting into. If you, the owner, don't know at least as much as that salesperson on how to estimate, not based on cubic pounds, which has absolutely no relationship to an office move, but on man hours. If you don't know as much as that salesperson does, and you have hired somebody who has no skin in the game because they get a percentage of revenue, then when the job doesn't finish on time for the price quoted and you can't collect what you billed, and the salesperson points to operations and says, "Boy, that crew really screwed everything up," and you don't know that you don't know because you don't know as much as that person knows, you're in big doo-doo. Mm-hmm. So my suggestion is that before you get into this arena, if you do, get trained by somebody, something, so you at least know, you know, information is power. So that if the job took longer, you're going to know, was it because it was underestimated or was it a service failure? So, you need to know these things.
So what I'm hearing you say is owners need to educate themselves first and foremost before going into this.
You have to do that.
I'm also hearing that most commercial salespeople are commissioned, you're saying off of gross revenue. Are not some commissioned off of the gross profit margin?
If I were to turn back the clock of time, I would pay on gross profit and not on revenue. Big mistake. I mean, give them some skin in the game. Give them some skin in the game. And I think most, you see, it's easier to pay off of revenue. And that's what the industry does. But I would, and the other thing that gets my attention, and not all the time, there's always some bad apples, but it's not uncommon that I've seen over the years. So you hire a salesperson to work for somebody else, and then 2 or 3 weeks, once he's over in working for you, he says, if we don't lower the rates for these big customers I brought over, they're going to go to another mover. I'd get something in writing. Before I hired a salesperson today, I'd get something in writing that they're not going to badger me and try to bully me to lower my rates after they get here with their book of business.
You're asking the salesperson to agree to the sell rate when they come over.
I want a salesperson to have skin in the game. That's why when they take my online training, I want salespeople to take not just the sales portion of the training, but all the operations portions too. Even though they may be, you know, bored out of their minds, I want them to see what happens when they overpromise. I want them to see the havoc they could cause when they say that the movers, oh, don't worry, we can handle it. I want them to have skin in the game. I'm keep a these, salesperson. I'm speaking.
I've got more questions for you, Ed. Keep these questions coming for Ed as well, because I've got questions. We got Paul over here. Hit that like button as well. I got a question. How much should a good O&I, office and industrial salesperson, be booking in a year? What are you looking for?
See, I can't answer that question. What's your gross profit margin? What does that mean? And when can you expect revenue? I lost a potential big prospect who was going to take my seminar all over the United States. This guy had delusions of grandeur that he was going to start a franchise. And he said, how long can I tell my franchisees, how long before they make money, a lot of money in this business, your gross profit margins? You know what my answer was? I don't know. Well, he didn't accept that answer. And I said, I don't know. It depends on the economy. Guess what? If there's a high occupancy rate and there's no vacant space for companies to move into, you ain't going to have a lot of office moves in your market. I don't care. You can't build a building overnight. Yeah. It could take 3-4 years to plan, get the land zoned and all. So, and it depends on what kind of service you render. And
you know, that's a good point. That's a good point. Unlike the residential market where there's no inventory, there is a ton of inventory. There's a lot of places you can go. We used to work in a fractional, like kind of a co-working or an office suites. We had office suites in our last building, and golly, a ton of people started there and ended up moving into permanent space. So I can vouch for the fact there's a lot of activity. Now, these are smaller companies. You know, we're only, you know, there's only seven of us, you know, whatever. But there's a lot of activity because there's a lot of inventory and there's a lot of deals to be had out there. And because you're not buying, you're renting, you're not as exposed to the interest rates. I've got a question for you coming from Paul. Paul, you're holding me down. I appreciate you. Paul says, I live in Atlanta, and I know that those Peachtree Movers trucks had that big peach on the side. Considering that everything in Georgia is peach-related, did you find any difficulty or challenges with other moving companies?
Oh, yes. And I mean, that's the story of my life. Look, this is going to be a long answer, but I want to make a point. The first 5 years when I started Peachtree Movers, I thought I was God's gift to the world. I thought I really was king of everything in office moving because I didn't know it at the time. We were the only company specializing in office moving. And everything I touched turned to gold. I mean, I was this grand mufti, whatever that is, till one day. And, you know, I was like on top of the world. I was like 12,000 feet up. That's how successful I was, Ben. And then one day it happened. Another moving company that was very successful in New Jersey and Chicago opened up a branch in Atlanta called Neptune Movers. And they moved Sears into their headquarters. You know, I own 44 wheel dollies. They own like 2,000. I own 4 moving vans. They came in with 10 tractor trailers that were designed specifically for office moves.
Wow.
I had 15 employees. they had 80 overnight, and they, and then they bought into the market. They were 10% less expensive than we were. Why would you use Peachtree Movers, second best, when you can hire the best with way more professionalism, experience, and equipment at 10% less? So I was being driven out of business. So what happened was, I became desperate. I really became desperate. I advertised on the radio. I took magazine ads out. We handed out flyers door to door. Nothing worked. So I tried something totally different.
What was it?
I was at my lowest point in my life. I became very spiritual. I really did. And those of you know who know me know I really am spiritual. I depend on prayer a lot. And I was at the lowest point in my life. I was in the valley. My lowest point, where before I was 12,000 feet up, now I was in the valley. And I started doing something I never did before. I started listening to the customer. And the customer used to say to me every time I did an estimate, I'm just moving 4 miles down the road. I'm just moving 6 miles down the road. Do I have to empty and pack the contents of my furniture? And I always had said, yes, you do. But now for the first time, because I was desperate, I listened to the customer. And a year and a half later, through prayer, it came through prayer, I invented the boxless move, where we inflated vinyl reusable airbags inside desk drawers. Oh. So that filled the empty space above the drawer. So when we tipped the desk up on its end, nothing moved around, nothing fell out, to go through a doorway or an elevator. And then at the destination, we right side up, we open the drawer, deflate the bags, take them out, reuse them, recycle them. And then I invented the spider crane. By the way, I called the airbags space gobblers. They gobbled up the space inside the desk drawers. And I called this device that looked like an engine hoist for a car with two giant suction cups attached to a vacuum pump. We'd lower them over the top of a 42-inch wide, six-drawer-high, 1,000-pound lateral file cabinet, turned on the vacuum pump, created the vacuum, lifted the cabinet 6 inches off the floor without tipping it or torquing it or bending it, placing on a low gravity steel dolly, moved it loaded right side up. So we were moving the contents in the furniture instead of the contents in the furniture. Ultimately, 3 years later, after that, Neptune went away. I have no idea what happened to him, but it taught me a couple things to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace. And you know what else I learned is so important? Remember I said I was at my lowest point in my life in the valley? Thank God I was. There would have never been the boxless move. Had I stayed on top 12,000 feet up, there would have been no reason to listen to the customer. Remember, everything I touched turned to gold. Everything was successful. It's when you were in the valley, when things grow and flourish, nothing grows at 12,000 feet up. It's like my brain. Nothing. There was no reason to change. Why fix it?
Yeah, if it wasn't broken? I love it. That's awesome. What a great outlook, too. What a great mindset. You know, to focus on the positives that come out of the adversity.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And companies right now that are hurting and suffering, this is the time to listen to the customer. This is the time not to sell price, but to say, in addition to a competitive price, what else are you looking for? I had heard this for years. Why do we have to shut down a day before the move and be put out of business after the move? And you mix up our files when we put them back in the file cabinet. Imagine this, no mixed up or lost files because they never came out of the furniture. No cardboard because we didn't have crates back in the day. No felling trees and filling landfills with corrugated.
Yeah.
And no downtime. I mean,
no, I love it. I mean, it's super intuitive. I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, it's one of those benefits you don't even have to explain it. It's so obvious to people. So I love it. It sells itself. Do you teach the, we've got more questions coming in. We've got time for maybe two more questions. Please give us some more questions in there. Appreciate you, David. I see you. We got more coming here. But Ed, do you teach this move, the boxless move, the spider crane thing? I mean, are these methods you're teaching nowadays in IOMI?
Well, I sold lots. Again, it was not my idea. I invented this for my own survival to overcome being put out of business by Neptune Moving and Storage. It's the only reason I listened. I came up with them. I never even thought of selling it to other moving companies, but I ended up selling them all over the United Kingdom, all over Canada, all over the United States. I couldn't believe it.
Selling what? Selling which one?
The space gobblers and the spider crane.
Are you still selling them now?
The thing for moving lateral. Now, I wouldn't sell it to any mover in Atlanta because that was my movement, right? But I sold it to movie companies all over the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. I stopped selling them in 2005 because the manufacturing costs of this equipment got outrageous. They stopped. I had a waterbed company making me the space gobbler, same material, but size of a pillowcase. But the last waterbed manufacturer in America went bankrupt. They were in New Jersey, and that was in 2005. So then for me to buy space gobblers, I'd have to buy them from this place called Taiwan. You ever hear of Taiwan?
Sure.
And I'd have to buy this thing called a container load. Look, unless I lived to be 1,000 years old, I'd never be able to sell all the space gobblers.
Containers of space gobblers. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You're hilarious, Ed. All right, we got more questions. Keep those questions coming in here. Let's see. David Yakim said, should carriers partner with property management companies like CBRE for leads, or are there websites for RFQs and for O&I relocations?
I teach that in the marketing course, New Business Development, in my online training. And I'm not going to give the store away to non-clients here.
But we're not giving milk away, Dave. You got to buy the cow, okay?
You got to buy it. But
you got to register. Where can people who are salivating for the knowledge that Ed Katz contains in his brain?
Am I allowed to give my phone number?
If I get a backlink and a promo code and I get a referral. No, yeah. Totally kidding. Where can people sign up for your course, Ed?
Well, why don't you just call me or email me? It's Ed Katz. Is there any way we can show that? Ed Katz.
Can we put that in the comments there? Ed Katz at what?
Officemoves.com.
Officemoves.com.
Ed Katz. And my website is officemoves.com.
Officemoves.com.
And my cell phone number, who I never give out to anybody.
Oh, here we go.
And if you believe that, I have a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you. But my cell phone number is 404-358-2172. 404-358-2172. But anyhow, I teach that, and I can tell you the difference is this. When a broker recommends you to his tenant that he's run the deal, your clients are more sophisticated than you give them credit for. They know darn well you're probably paying that broker a commission if he uses your moving company. So there's not a whole lot of credibility there. But if you can get property management people to recommend you,
yep.
And you better ask yourself this question. Do they like salespeople? No, they're operations people. Think about your operations manager. Does he like salespeople? If he's normal or she's normal, the answer is no. That's who property management people are. They are the complaint department of an office building. They get calls daily. I mean, I found rodent excrement on my desk this morning. What are you going to do about it? I'm too cold in this corner of the building. I'm too hot in this corner of the building. The janitorial company that last night came in and stole this from my drawer. This is who they are. So you go in and say, hey, I'm Eddie the Mover, and I'm with such and such a company. If you give me leads, I'll get you tickets to the game or buy a dinner. You better not sound like a salesperson. There's only two things they hate more. They hate salespeople, and they really don't like movers because they disrupt the building. What I teach and preach is how to behave professionally in an office building. Ask yourself this question. Do you teach your employees how to behave in an office building?
Apparently not.
Of course not. They hate movers. But we took that negative, made it a positive, which is what I teach in my online training.
I love it. Fantastic. This is great. David Yakim, did that do it for you? You gotta get the course, David. No,
I'm on a fixed income, David. I'm on a fixed income. Send me money, please.
Send him money. Send some of that Coleman money. Get Jeff Coleman's wallet out.
Yeah,
okay,
David.
There you go. This is fantastic. So what's the course like, Ed? How does it work?
I spoon feed my clients to take. First of all, I teach them, how do you get leads in the first place? How do you not just find the haystacks and find the needles in the haystack? How do you get that prospect to the point where they say, come on out and tell me your story? Then we spend a lot of time how to estimate accurately, not based on cube and pounds, but on man hours, which every other successful service industry in the world uses, except the moving industry. Think about this. I use cube and pounds, so I got 10,000 pounds. That's three men for 10 hours. Oh, there's an elevator. I'm going to add 10%. Oh, there's a long carry. I'm going to add 10%. Did you ever ask yourself this question? How in the heck did they come up with 10%? Why not 4.5%? Why not 13.5%?
Right.
It's capricious and arbitrary. There's absolutely no relationship between cube and pounds and estimating accurately. We teach a scientifically designed proprietary formula based on man hours. I can take a person who's never been on a move, and within 13 hours of online training, of course, you pause it whenever you like and come back to where you left off. They can go out and estimate accurately so jobs can finish on time for the price quoted. Then we teach not just the estimating formula, but accessorial services. If you know what a U-shaped desk is, it's made out of 15 different components. How to figure out the time to disassemble and reassemble that. How to measure the time to load library books and unload them. I mean, all these things are taught. Sure. Then we teach operations, how to render the service we promised in the sales presentation, how to put down extensive building protection to minimize the risk of damage to real property, how to control the crew. It's so sad, Ben, it's so sad in our industry. If a guy or a woman, but if a guy breathes, that means he's not room temperature, he's alive, and he's got a commercial CDL license, you can be a supervisor. Let me tell you something. That's just one of the requirements that you can drive a truck. If you don't have a backbone and a spine and you want to be liked by your crew members, you can't be a supervisor. It's called altruism. You do what's best for the group at the expense of the individual. I don't want to work outside on the liftgate or the ramp. It's cold and it's snowing. Based on the needs of the job and the experience and skill you have, you need to work outside. But I worked here the last 3 days. You got to see. And if you want to just be friends and let them work inside, you put some guy out there with no experience, you're going to have somebody get hurt and you're going to damage what you're moving.
So let me ask you. So is this course more for salespeople or is it more for operations?
We have different tracks for different job classifications. We have a track for salespeople. We want them to take all 13 and a half hours because I want them, as I said earlier, to feel the pain of overpromising. I want them to see how challenging it can be. Customer service takes about a third of the training. They can estimate out of 4 million in revenue back in the day, which would be like 7.5 million revenue today. But out of 4 million in revenue, 400,000 was booked over the phone by a customer service lady who had never been on a move, but could quote and book jobs using my Manar formula for moves that were one truckload or less, or an internal move one side of the floor to the other, one floor to the other, again, one truckload or less. Then we have for operations, how to control the customer. It's so unfair. We send the same guy who's got a commercial driver's license out to deal with the customer. Do you know you should never give somebody bad information in front of an audience? Do we teach our supervisors that? Do we teach our supervisor how to get the customer contact out of the break room, away from his or her cronies, so that that person doesn't feel that you're disrespecting them and they're going to teach you what a thing
is? Ed, no disrespect, but I got to wrap here in a second, okay? I got one more question about this exhaustive course you teach. Is it all self-directed online? Is there an in-person component? Do you ever do classroom stuff for the large enough group? How is it administered?
Well, I go two or three times a year for the in-person, which is outrageously expensive. I still offer. I'm going back to JK Moving Services, who's my poster child for adopting and implementing everything I have taught and preached to them. I'm going back December 1st for another 3-day in-person seminar. This will be the 11th one I've done since I sold Peachtree Movers. Wow. But normally I do it online, and it's very inexpensive. We have different packages for different levels of, you know, what you want to get from the learning. But most of the time, most of my clients, since I rolled it out in 2016, 95% of them, maybe even higher than that, take it online. You get it for an entire year. So as you grow and become more successful, it's available to your new employees. You sit them down in front of the laptop. You have them take whatever job classification they are in front of the computer, and they're trained.
I like it. Okay. I got to stop you because we got to save time for our favorite segment of the show, Ed. Okay. It's a little game. You want to play a game?
I don't play games. I'm not competitive. But go ahead. I'll watch.
Well, here we go. Feel free to lose. All right. It's a game called Overrated, Underrated. All right. It's pretty simple. There's two rules. You ready?
Okay.
I'm going to give you a topic. You're going to tell me, is it overrated or it's underrated? Got it? Those are your two options.
Okay. Don't Am I allowed to give an explanation, though?
If asked. The second is I will let you know if you are correct. Ooh. Are you ready? Yeah, I know. This is the tough part, okay? A lot of people tune in and stick around just for this. So if you're sticking around to see if Ed is correct, please hit that like button right now. Send him a little love. Send him a little support. Hit those clapping hands, okay? And let's get ready to rumble here. First one, promoting from within. Overrated or underrated?
I don't know what how to answer it. We only promote it from within. So is that called underrated? I'm a believer in promoting from within.
So it's underrated then. You think more people should underrated. Do it?
You'll have to translate for me.
I'll translate for you, okay? You like it, it's underrated. You don't like it, it's overrated.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah, rule number one. All right, here we go. You think it's underrated, promoting from within. You know, I tend to believe, even though we're a recruitment firm, right, and our job is to go out and get people from the opposite of within, outside. I love it. I think we need to promote from within more often. You know, you have loyalty, you have career path, you have deep institutional knowledge. They're not just a mercenary with a book of business that's going to go to the next guy that gives them 11% on their comp plan. I dig it. I dig it, Ed. And I think your programs are really good for upskilling people, taking them from maybe being a COD sales rep to – you ever take people from being a COD sales rep to being an O&I sales rep?
All the time. Just give me a salesperson and who's successful at selling, and they can do O&I.
Love it. Love it. All right, next topic. Commercial office moving. Overrated or underrated?
I don't understand the question in terms of underrated, overrated, though.
Do you think it is underrated or do you think it is overrated? If you like it, it's underrated. If you don't like it, it's overrated.
Well, I have to. I'm prejudiced here. I love it. It's underrated.
It is underrated. You're right. Man, you're 2 for 2, Ed. This is great. All right, let's keep it moving here. Hourly labor, overrated or underrated?
Well, I can tell you this. The skill level for an office move can be 40% of your skill can be unskilled. Think about that. If I'm doing a residential move and I'm carrying a dresser from upstairs down to the truck, I need high skill, high experience, right? If you follow the IOMI drill of having a human conveyor belt of a bucket brigade, passing it down the line, yeah, the guys, they all the way up the furniture and set it on a four-wheel dolly, high skill, but the pushers to push it from one location to the next to the elevator, totally unskilled. So 40% of your labor, like from the elevator exit in the lobby out to the truck, unskilled. On the lift gate or ramp, skilled, loader, skilled. So out of a crew of 10 at that one location, 4 out of the 10 or 40% can be unskilled. So I guess I'm saying underrated. I like it.
Excellent. Excellent. It didn't take you long to figure this out, Ed. You know what? I dig it. I like the way you break it down. It makes perfect sense. Next topic. Moving subcontractors, overrated or underrated? It's kind of the opposite of hourly.
Way overrated. I think I finally understand these.
You got it, Ed. You got it.
Hey, the nursing home is going to call me in about 2 minutes.
Train the trainer, Ed. Let's go.
Look, you want to be a generic commodity, use a subcontractor. In some cities, they use the same contractor, works for several different moving companies. Yep. So the moving company is nothing more than a marketing machine, a sales machine. And if you're a contractor, subcontractor, you're going to want to get it done as fast and cheap as possible. You're not going to put trained, professional, experienced movers out there because that's going to hurt your bottom line. So the customer is caught in the crosshairs. Salesperson promises, oh, we're going to do all these things. And then the subcontractor, their agenda is to get it done fast and cheap. They're not going to use extensive building protection. They're not going to handle computers the way we recommend. So how do you sell that? I don't know.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. I think this is one of the issues when people talk about the driver shortage that's in our industry. I think it's because a lot of we use owner-operators, we use subcontractors. Well, it's hard to hire those people. It's hard to retain those people, and it's hard to train those people.
Most of my supervisors, you couldn't be a supervisor unless you could drive a truck. And this is back in the day. You had a 5-speed stick shift on a floor with a 2-speed rear end. We invested the time and money to train mover helpers that could be leaders to be drivers. That's the easiest link in the chain to train. You don't have to hire somebody that worked for somebody else as a driver.
Steve Meyer saying good questions for Matt Dolan. Thanks, Steve. We're going to try to have Matt on the show here soon. Last question, I think. Hiring salespeople from your competitor, overrated or underrated?
Overrated. Unless you know as much as they, be careful.
Interesting. Really good stuff, Ed. This is great. We covered it all in an hour. Phenomenal. You're a wealth of knowledge. I know we could go another hour with the stories and the techniques and everything. But people, you need to sign up for IOMI. Okay? There's 12 more hours of this kind of stuff that Ed's got to teach you. So sign up for IOMI. You've got his information. Start texting him. Send him crazy pictures. Do whatever. You know, there's his email as well, you know. This is great. Fantastic. Ed, you want to leave us with a final thought before we say goodbye?
This has been an honor and a pleasure, and I'm so glad you're wrapping it up because my wife is already making the chicken soup.
You smell that good cooking. That working from home. You get soft, Ed. That's great.
Thank you so much.
The honor is mine. The pleasure is mine. It's wonderful to really get to know you. You are a treasure, a wealth of knowledge. And again, I highly recommend people check out IOMI and see what it's about, because I tell you what, commercial office moving, O&I right now, it's the only section of moving, with the exception maybe of like last mile logistics, if you're even equipped to do that. Honestly, O&I is the only area of moving that's growing right now this year. So I highly recommend you learn from Ed. Awesome, everybody. Hey, stay tuned. Next show is tomorrow, same time. We've got Hosea Botley and we've got Mel Smith from Aversal Global Relocation on tomorrow. Again, talking about diversification. This is an MBE and service disabled veteran owned small business that does international moving, but they also do freight. So tune in tomorrow to hear what that's about. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We wouldn't have a show without you. Hit that like button one more time. Send some love out to Ed, and we will see you same time tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.